athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
We're live from Radio Row, Super Bowl 59 here in New Orleans. Thank you for making Box to Row a part of your day. Look, after 16 years, Box to Row is on the air at the Super Bowl. We're so excited about that. You know, we've had a plethora of people to come through our broadcast location. As a matter of fact, you're going to hear today from Steve Weich of NFL Network is going to join us on the program today. You're going to hear him talk about not only the game, but sort of his matriculation in terms of him being at NFL Network, coming from Howard University. So we're going to talk with him a little bit later on in the program. Also, we're going to talk Chiefs and Eagles today here on Box to Row. After all, that is why we, in fact, are here. As a matter of fact, so we're going to talk some Eagles and Chiefs today here on the program. Look, even though right now we're talking NFL, right? We're talking Super Bowl. The NBA is still in play in terms of a big trade, or a couple of big trades, as a matter of fact, because the last time we talked, the Luka trade hadn't happened at that time. Luka for Anthony Davis hadn't happened at that time, right? So now that that's happened, and now you also have Jimmy Butler now coming to the Golden State Warriors, Andrew Wiggins and others went over now to the Golden State Warriors. So you've got sort of that dynamic that we can talk about a little bit later on in the program as well. But I'm going to tell you what, that Luka for Anthony Davis trade was absolutely unbelievable. Like, I had to look twice. I had to look twice when I saw that come up on my X feed. Like, Luka for Anthony Davis. I think that from a long-term perspective for the Lakers, I mean, this is a pretty big-time move because you're talking about Luka Doncic, who's absolutely unbelievable as a player now. You know, he has some health concerns, but so does Anthony Davis. Like, Anthony Davis has had, matter of fact, both players were traded for each other, were both hurt at the time of the trade. So they both have sort of some health issues. But I think from a long-term perspective, I mean, if you look at Luka, like, he's going to be the next face of the Los Angeles Lakers. And by the way, I'm saying the next face, let's not forget, you know, LeBron James has still got a couple of years left. I mean, is this a team, when you're talking about the Lakers, that could win an NBA championship, not this year, but possibly next year? Well, we'll see. The Lakers have actually made a couple of other moves as well that we can talk about a little bit later on if we have time in the program, because we got a lot to get to on today's program. But look, you're talking about a generational player. And then what Dallas was saying was that, okay, we get Anthony Davis back, it allows us to win immediately. Now, I'm assuming when the Mavericks say immediately, they really mean next year. Because if you look at the Mavericks right now, I mean, the Mavericks' record isn't great. Like, could they make up some ground? We're more than halfway through the season. Can they make up some ground? Sure, they can. This is the defending Western Conference champion. So, they could definitely make up some ground. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But, you know, we're probably more so talking about next year when we're talking about the Dallas Mavericks and what Anthony Davis brings to the table. But look at what you lose in Luka, right? Like, Kyrie's still there. You still got some really good pieces, some really good players. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, there had been talk that the organization, the general manager in particular, wasn't exactly happy with Luka. As a matter of fact, that's maybe why that Luka wasn't offered the long-term deal where he could have made $311 million, right? Like, so you're talking sort of about that that dynamic right there. But look, I mean, it's a situation where I think the Lakers are set to win in the future. And it's a team that's set up to win, you know, certainly in the future. So we'll ultimately see how that plays out. But that's, you know, I mean, that's some NBA talk, but we're talking a lot of National Football League today here on the program. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk with Joshua Williams. Joshua Williams of Fayetteville State, one of the cornerbacks for the Kansas City Chiefs. Had a chance to catch up with him on media day or during media day with the respective teams on Wednesday. So going to replay part of that interview. Also, Brian Cook joined us as well, the starting safety. He originally played his collegiate football at Howard and then ultimately decided to transfer to Cincinnati and now is the starting safety or one of the starting safeties for the Kansas City Chiefs. So he's also going to join us today or going to replay part of that interview or that conversation we had with him also on today's program. Look, you can join us here on Box to Row. Hit us up via X at Box to Row, BOXTOROW. Also on Facebook, BOX2ROW. You can join us on the conversation as we are on Radio Row. Well, I'm going to play some sound, right? From, you know, we've got a game to look at. We're going to look at the matchup between Kansas City and the Philadelphia Eagles. We're really going to look at that, but I want to play some sound. I had a chance to ask Patrick Mahomes a question during the question and answer session in terms of, look, I mean, you've been here now, what, five times? He's been here five times. They've won three of those. And is this, you know, something that is still fun for him? Obviously, it is. But I'm talking about not only the game, but all of the other pieces, the media pieces, et cetera, and how he compares that with the very first time that he was here. And so had a chance to catch up or to ask Patrick Mahomes this question.
Hey, Patrick, right here. This being your fifth Super Bowl, what do you remember most about this whole process with respect to the first Super Bowl? And when I say the whole process, I mean the preparation, not only for the game, but the media and all of that, as opposed to now. How do you kind of compare that? Is it still kind of fun for you?
Yeah, it's still fun. I mean, every Super Bowl is its own experience. But I think more than anything, it's just preparing because you know the process. You know what it takes throughout the week, and it gives you more experience and more calm where you're not worried, and you just continue to work to be the best version of yourself you can be and learn from your previous Super Bowls, and hopefully you can play even better in the game when you get out there on Sunday.
So Patrick Mahomes right there, had a chance again to catch up with him and ask him about being here at the Super Bowl and comparing it to his very first time. Look, you've got a really good matchup when you talk about these two teams here in the Super Bowl. This is a rematch from the Super Bowl from a couple of weeks ago, right? And you look at this matchup and what's different? Like, the Eagles are a better football team, right? Like, you've got Saquon Barkley makes all the difference in the world. And a lot of the talk has been, okay, how do you go about, if you're the Chiefs and you're up front, how do you go about stopping Saquon Barkley? I think part of it is because, look, the Eagles have a really, really good offensive line, but it's going to be imperative upon Chris Jones and those guys to beat their blocks one-on-one to try and get to Saquon Barkley. In other words, try to get some tackles for losses. You know, you're going to have to come and do some run blitzes. Like, we talk about the Chiefs, and I've said this the last several weeks. Okay, if you're going to talk about the Chiefs in terms of the championships and the three Super Bowls, I mean, certainly you're going to talk about Pat Mahomes. You're going to talk about Andy Reid. But you've also got to talk about Steve Spagnuolo. Like, Spagnuolo has dialed up these really good defenses and seems to make the right calls at the right time. Go back a couple of weeks ago to when the Chiefs really needed a stop against Josh Allen and the Bills. They come up with it. Go back to the divisional or the divisional round against the Texans, right? Like, they needed to stop the Texans. It was a one possession game for a while with the Texans driving. The Texans defense kept them in that game. And then you look at the pressure that they were able to put on CJ Stroud, right? Like on that those last couple of possessions. So he seems to dial up the right calls at the right time. Plus, he's got a wealth of talent. I would make the argument that if you go back a couple of years ago, maybe the best free agent signing in the offseason was by the Chiefs, and that was of Chris Jones, because he wrecked shop last year for the Chiefs in on the way to the Chiefs getting another Super Bowl. And then you talk about this year and what he's been able to do. You look at the secondary. That secondary for the Chiefs has been really, really good this year. So we can talk about the offense and all of the great things that the offense has done, but you got to be able to talk about what the defense has done for the Kansas City Chiefs as well. If you look on the other side of things, and I talk, you know, obviously we're talking about what Saquon Barkley can do, right? But like Jalen Hurts is good. The offensive line is good, but that defense is really, really good for the Eagles, and in particular up front. Like you've got some guys up front for the Eagles that are really, really, really getting it done. So, I mean, you know, you've got to kind of look at it from both sides, and we're going to do that definitely today a little bit later on in the program. And so look, I'm excited to be here. It had been 16 years, as I mentioned, that we were able to come back to the Super Bowl and be able to do this and be on a Radio Row and be able to talk to a bunch of different people, and got a chance to see the great Bill Roden, who I talked to when I was in school at Morgan State University, would call upon from time to time. Jared Bell may join us a little bit later on. We'll see. Depends upon, you know, his schedule, because he's the NFL columnist for USA Today. So a lot of people may stop by on today's program. And then, of course, don't forget, if you're listening to this program early, you can catch us on Saturday, 10 to noon Eastern. That is 9 to 11 Central Time and 7 to 9 Pacific Time. You can catch us at TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com and also on the Box to Row YouTube page. You can also catch us there. And we're going to be doing a live show, have some live sit downs, replay some of the conversations we've had during the course of the week. Like we've been able to catch up with a bunch of assistant coaches from both teams that either are HBCU grads or have HBCU ties. So we're very much looking forward to this program and to bringing you this program, I guess, for about the next 45 minutes or so. Live from Radio Row is Box to Row Super Bowl 59 here in the Big Easy New Orleans. Up next here on Box to Row, we're going to be talking with Steve Weich of NFL Network.
If you have diabetes, listen up. If you have insurance, you can qualify for a continuous glucose monitor. With a CGM, you can continuously track your levels and trends and spend more time in range, significantly lowering your A1C. More importantly, a CGM eliminates the one thing most people with diabetes hate: painful finger sticks. Order your new continuous glucose monitor today. If you use insulin and if you've seen your diabetes care provider within the last 6 months, you may qualify for your own CGM right now. We'll do all the insurance paperwork and deliver your new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost to you. Medicare and most insurances will cover your CGM, so don't wait. Have your insurance handy and call the Aptiva Medical CGM Health Hotline right now.
800-946-6813. 800-946-6813. 800-946-6813. That's 800-946-6813. 6813.
The others pretend. You're listening to the only sports talk show in America that actually cares what you've got to say. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
Live from Radio Row here in New Orleans. Box to Row coming to you from Super Bowl 59. Glad to be with you. And of course, in the last segment, kind of setting up the table, giving you my thoughts on the matchup between the Eagles and the Chiefs. You heard some sound from Pat Mahomes also in the program. Steve Weich actually had a scheduling conflict, so Steve Weich is going to join us in the next segment, here on Box to Row. Well, in the interim, as a matter of fact, had a chance to catch up with Joshua Williams of Fayetteville State. Joshua Williams in his third season as one of the cornerbacks for the Chiefs and looking to, if you can believe this, looking to win his third Super Bowl in 3 years. What a situation that Joshua Williams has fallen into, the former fourth round pick out of Fayetteville State, and had a chance to catch up with him and talk with him about what it meant to be playing in his third Super Bowl.
Let me start here. What is this like? How crazy is that, Joshua? Third Super Bowl in 3 years and a major contributor on his team.
I mean, man, it's a blessing, honestly. You know, all the time we got older guys and coaches in the locker room trying to remind us the things we're doing right now and how special it is to be in this position right now. So, I mean, you know, we don't take it for granted. And, you know, we're really just blessed and honored to be able to be a part of something like this.
How are you kind of growing as a player now in your third season?
I think definitely just, you know, becoming more consistent with the game and, you know, learning all the ins and outs. A lot of times that is more the hard part. You know, sometimes you can get the football down pretty easy, but being able to go down there and you know, replicate some of the things you're doing consistently is the harder thing to do.
What has this third season been like for you? Particularly, I would say the second half seems like of this season, and even into now the, you know, sort of the playoff run, you seem to be, I don't know, you seem to be more comfortable. Is that a fair assessment?
Definitely. I mean, you know, just going on in the season, a lot of times the longer you get, you know, kind of onto the season, you kind of get just more settled in, whether that be, you know, being more consistent, like I said, or just, you know, kind of being able to kind of, like you said, be comfortable out there and not feel too tense or too tight.
Yeah, do you feel like maybe you're playing some of your best football of your career right now?
I mean, there's so many ups and downs in a football season, you know, you can never really answer that for sure. I would like to think so. And, you know, I think there's a lot more for me to go a lot higher that I can do. And I plan, you know, to continue to elevate and get better and, you know, just to be a better pro, better football player in all aspects.
What's the jump been like for you? It's one thing to make a jump. And look, I'm all about our schools. I'm a Morgan State grad, right? But what's the jump? Like, that's a major jump. More so coming from D2, not even HBCU, D2, to come in and playing in the National Football League. What was that jump initially like for you, and how have you adjusted to it now?
Right. Of course, the game speed was a little faster, but I think a lot of the changes that I had to get used to was more so, you know, being able to go out there and you know, like we were talking about, feel comfortable going out there, believing in myself and knowing I belong. Because, honestly, that's the main part, your confidence. That's what kind of puts you in the position to make plays and stuff like that. So, you know, the football thing is always going to be, you know, that's in between the lines. And you can, a lot of times, get used to that. But in your head and the mental aspects are sometimes the harder things to do.
What's you and, I'm just curious, and I know Brian went to another school after Howard, but what's you and Brian's relationship like as HBCU guys?
Yeah, I mean, just also as you know, we all both got drafted at the same time. We're both in the secondary. You know, we're close. And, you know, for him to share just a common, you know, background with me, that's kind of one of the things we can, you know, talk about and relate with each other with. So, you know, whether that's us talking about HBCU bands or Greek life or whatever, you know, a lot of the guys in the locker room, they didn't get to see that. So me and him can kind of share that and just talk about that and share our experiences.
What do you remember most about those days at Fayetteville State?
Definitely just the people around me. I had great coaches, great friends. I'd say a lot of my, like, longtime friends are from Fayetteville State. So, you know, a lot of my college life, I was sitting there kind of sometimes wondering, okay, I ended up going HBCU. How am I going to, you know, do this? How am I going to do that? How am I going to make it to the NFL? I feel like I landed in a perfect, you know, opportunity for me to do what I did. I met people who, you know, helped me get to where I am now. I met people who molded my mind, who made me more mature. Just all kind of great people at my school that I met, coaches, you know, teammates. And a lot of them are the reason I'm here right now.
What made you decide? Obviously, you grew up in Fayetteville, so you knew about Fayetteville State. What led you to go? What kind of offers, maybe other offers, did you have, if any?
Right. I mean, coming out, you know, I was big and fast. I didn't have a lot of film, but, you know, there were definitely some schools that were interested in me. But a lot of my problems was, like, grades, and that was kind of the reason why I had to go D2. So there was definitely some maturing that had to get done while I was at Fayetteville State. And a lot, like what I was just saying, a lot of the growth I did do was because of the people around me, my academic advisor, you know, my coaches, like I said, and, you know, just helping me become, like, a great football player on the field and a great student and now professional off the field.
Last thought. I don't want to – I know some other people want to get time. Spagnuolo, can you speak to playing for him this in your third season, how much you've learned from him and how he knows how to dial up the right plays at the right – it seems like that's been happening – forever, he knows when to dial up the right plays at the right time.
Sure. I mean, Spags, he's just a great mind. Whether, you know, you're just talking to him or you're kind of looking at, like, the defenses and the way he'll, you know, dissect a game plan or offense. And you know, you can kind of see just the genius behind his mind, the way it works. And, you know, he's a brilliant mind. He can, you know, plan things 2-3 quarters ahead, you know, show you something in the first quarter, and maybe the quarterback can see it again in the fourth quarter, and they think it's going to be the same thing, and it's a completely different thing. And I feel like that's a lot of times why our blitzes get home, and why, you know, quarterbacks make mistakes. It's just, you know, he's showing so many different looks, and he knows when to do it and how to do it, and, you know, there's so many intricacies he's telling us to do. So, you know, all of these things are like a puzzle piece to him, and then it all comes together at the right moment. You know, a lot of times in the fourth quarter, third quarter, when the quarterback is starting to think he's seeing one thing and he's not.
So that voice of Joshua Williams of Fayetteville State, now with the Kansas City Chiefs, again, looking for his third Super Bowl. Also had a chance to catch up with Brian Cook. Brian Cook was on the podium. It was so you have where different players are at tables. So Joshua Williams was at one of the tables, but then you have 10 podiums in the room. And Brian Cook, the safety for the Chiefs, was at one of the podiums in the room. So I had a chance to catch up with Brian Cook, former Howard player, and talk with him about this matchup as well, being from Howard and then, of course, playing in another Super Bowl.
Your days at Howard University?
I mean, right now, I think it goes back to the family that I met, you know, along the way. I got a best friend named Jordan. My lady, my wife, she's also met her at Howard as well. But just the core and the origin of who I became during those 2 years while I was there helped create who I am today, you know what I'm saying? So Howard has a special place in my heart. They always will. They give me my only offer coming out of high school. And looking back at it, I do want to go back and, like, see the place again. I haven't been in a long time, but a lot of memories there, mainly because of the people that I met along the way, and we're gonna keep going from there.
How do you kind of, what's your thoughts on sort of representing for HBCUs? Like, there's not a lot of guys, probably 40% of the guys in the league that are HBCU players were not drafted. They were undrafted free agents. What does that mean to you to kind of, especially in light of where HBCUs are and the respect that they're starting to get more, what does that mean to you to be a representative of that?
It means a lot. You know, sometimes you don't realize who's really watching at times, but understanding, you know, the power this all this has and being able to become one with it, you know what I'm saying, and try to always show the right things to do and, you know, how to do it the right way, you know what I'm saying, as far as working hard and things of that nature. But I think it's bigger than me. It's more of a sense of resemblance. So when they can see me, they can see someone that walked in Cook Hall, you know, went down Georgia Avenue, you know, ate at the McDonald's on the corner, you know what I'm saying, slept in Towers, the building. So it's like someone that went through the same experiences as you and still made it on the other side to tell a story. Like, it's inspiring, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's the main thing I can get or try to, you know, give off to everybody else watching, is just be inspired. Understand that everybody's a star, everybody has their own things, you know, the galaxy and the universe or whatever you want to call it. God created all his stars to shine, you know what I'm saying? And sometimes people think that it's not, you don't have enough space, but in our reality, we do. Everybody can shine at their own time.
Two last thoughts. Howard, did you have a chance to keep up with Howard in the Celebration Bowl? And if Howard had
Brian Cook at that time, would the Bison have won the Celebration Bowl?
Of course. I'm always saying, of course they would have. But I didn't get a chance to watch it. I think I watched bits and parts of it, but I had to like go work out or something like that. Yeah, I don't remember exactly what happened. But, you know, I watched a little bit of it. So I'm hoping that, you know, as years goes on, they continue to get better, they continue to improve. I have some guys there that I played with. I think they're coaching right now, too. So it's definitely up and coming. You know what I'm saying? A lot of hope for them. Hopefully they can showcase, you know, their skills and be seen.
And then last thought, Spagnuolo, working with him. I mean, I think he's probably doesn't get as much credit as a lot of the other, you know, Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, but he's as integral a part as anybody in terms of these three Super Bowls. Speak to working with him, but also him dialing up the right plays at the most critical times.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the plays he call, like, it's a bit, like, especially at the end of the game, it's a bit of exciting because, you know, obviously the offense don't know what we're going to run. But I think when we hear the call come in and we understand, like, all right, how can we, you know, execute this the best way possible and then also give it a great disguise beforehand, it's exciting because we also know what's on the line. You know, so we can win a game with this one play. Like, everyone's trying to be locked in, and, you know, and blitz for violence and cover on the back end. But having the trust for us to go out there and get it done, I think that speaks volume of him as far as a human being, as a coach as well. And just the mastermind, man. Like, he's always learning, always teaching at the same time, which is crazy to think about. But as he's teaching us, he's continuing learning. You know what I'm saying? He continues to give us more information. Like, I try to be a sponge and soak up any information I can.
So that's the voice of Brian Cook, formerly of Howard, now one of the starting safeties for the Kansas City Chiefs. You've got it locked to Boxer Row. We're live from Radio Row here in New Orleans, Super Bowl 59. I'm your host, Donald Ware. We're going to step aside, take our break, come back. You're going to hear from Steve Weich of the NFL Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
Here with Stephen Curry, your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson, and it's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
Main event! Jey Uso joining us here. Could there be a possible return to the bloodline?
For me?
Yes. At some point.
I'm gone, D. Hey, I threw the deuces up before. I'll do it again, man.
Come on, main event. That's family, man. I mean, I'm not talking about now. I get it. But down the line, like, come on.
Hey, D, you see how they be treating me, man? Come on, man. That something. It be your own family sometimes be doing you wrong, Lou. I gotta go, man. Hey, I'm doing all right by myself.
She's Simone Biles.
Actually really fun, like, to be honest. Had a lot of fun. We were like, oh, of course, like, we're in the best shape of our life. We're feeling confident about our body, and we hope that other young girls and women, like, feel that being strong is still beautiful.
The one and only Michael Strahan, and cannot have you on without talking about Texas Southern. Cannot. So how did you ultimately end up at Texas Southern?
Yeah, from Houston, grew up in Germany. When I was a senior in high school, my dad said, I'm going to send you to stay with your uncle in Houston and get a football scholarship. So I went to Houston. I played at Westbury High School for 1 year. Texas Southern was probably the only school that saw me play, being right there in Houston and being a local boy. And Coach Walter Highsmith, I went over to see him, and he offered me a scholarship. It was perfect for me, man, to go to the HBCU, to go to Texas Southern. The size of the school, the education they gave me, not just in the classroom, but about life. I would have been swallowed up at another school. I wouldn't have felt as if I really could have made a difference or had a real purpose of being there. But at Texas Southern, I always felt like I could make a difference and I had a purpose.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Skylar Diggins of the WNBA. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. You know, just been able to work a lot on my body and my shape, and a lot of things that I feel like I needed to work on in the offseason. Was able to get that done, and you know, it's showing.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
I appreciate the love that I get, and I appreciate the sport of hip-hop, and it's given me back that same love in return, you know, for the amount of years that I've been doing it. I've always went into it with the same, you know, spirit of I make music for the people. I make it go for them, and I always make them a part of it. I never separated myself and tried to be a star. I've always wanted to be one of the people that you can look to as somebody that was, you know, like your uncle because of the way that I treat people, and I feel like my career is representative of that. That's why the longevity is there. That's why the love is there, and that's why I maintain the status of, you know, being relevant for so many years.
I'm talking about none other than Serena Williams.
That was definitely one of the better matches I've ever played. I've had it just like that. You know, I was really focused, just really, you know, excited.
Demetrius Flannery, a.k.a. Lil Meech.
He sent in Atlanta, told me that he was going to move me from my hometown, Miami, to L.A., put me in acting classes, and I had to go 5 days a week, 2 times a day. Only had about a year and a half, but once I started, I didn't want to stop, you know, so once in a lifetime opportunity, I didn't want to watch somebody else, you know, get the role of playing my father and me having to watch him on TV. Opportunity passed me by, so I just buckled down and just focused, man, put everything to the side, made sure that my number one thing that I wanted to do was focus on being the best possible actor I can be for the show, and that's how it happened.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm just, you know, trying to get better every single day. We've been through a lot as a team, and I enjoy playing with a great group of guys. So, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy every moment of it.
That is the voice of Common. You went to Florida A&M.
Oh, FAMU days were some of the best days of my life. I mean, I had so much fun there. It was, like, invigorating. It was an introduction to a new aspect of culture in the world. I mean, the Southern girls is just incredible. you know, the food was great. The black college experience, you can't beat that.
Kyrie Irving.
Playing at Duke for Coach K. What was that like and how that prepared you for the league now?
Playing 11 games, you know, a lot of people think that's not a, you know, big package for you to become a better player. But for me, it was. Playing for Coach K, he gave me the keys to the car, and I was driving it in first 8 games, and, you know, being a part of something special like that and having a brotherhood built at an institution such as that one is an experience that you never forget.
Ice Cube has been our guest.
Hey, man, thanks for letting me talk a little music, movies, and sports. Hey, my favorite three topics.
Hey, y'all, it is the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best on Box to Row. Tune in if you want to catch the best BEST interview ever.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports, with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's Box to Row, real, relevant radio.
We're back here on Radio Row, Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans. We're glad to be here. Look, this gentleman, my next guest, as a matter of fact, has been coming on Box to Row since, 2007, mate.
Been a minute.
You know what I mean? He is Steve Weiss of the NFL Network, and he's pretty big time. We get a guy, Howard grad, by the way. We get a guy like this on our program. We must be important. We must be doing something when Steve Weiss joins us at the Super Bowl, as a matter of fact.
You do important stuff, right? You're one of the leading voices in black radio. In HBCU coverage. And that is important to me. That is near and dear to my heart. I respect everything you do. I love when I'm doing my research. Oh, this person's name, a boxer, all American, or a preseason, all me acting. And I'm like, look at my man, Donald, man. You've been grinding for years. It is great to see you here. And you know, I'm always going to make time for you.
You always do. We appreciate it. But let me ask you about that, because as you know, probably, and you know this, but I'm just saying, probably for the last 7 or 8 years, every year I'm banging on the NFL. And I realize teams, look, I realize the NFL is doing a lot when it comes to, you got the combine. No other entity has a combine specific to it. I got it. But at the end of the day, all of the 40% of the players that are in the league right now that are HBCU guys are undrafted free agents.
Yeah.
So that means they could have been drafted. So what are your thoughts? I mean, how do we get it so these guys get drafted?
Unfortunately, the trend is going to go the other way. And it's not necessarily because NFL teams aren't looking at these guys. First off, to your point, the NFL teams are like, well, these guys are going to be so hungry. We cannot draft them. They'll get, look at Xavier Smith, right, with the Rams.
Yep.
A couple years ago, he came out. Every team was talking about drafting him.
Right.
And then they're like, you know what? Let's just wait. If he doesn't get drafted, we're going to give him a nice little chunk of change
right.
to come sign as an undrafted free agent. So that's how they think. Now you've got, I'm blanking on the name, the DB for the Chiefs.
Joshua Williams.
Joshua Williams, right. He was drafted, right?
So he did.
He's going to be playing. He's going to be playing the game. So, but there's a handful of those guys. And every now and then, you know, we will see a guy drafted. But the main reason why he's going to go in the other direction is the transfer portal. Because 86% of players drafted last year were from the Power Five conferences. So if you got a stud, I forget the wide receiver's name at like Arkansas Pine Bluff this year. He was the dude, right?
Yeah, he was.
Right after the final game, he transferred to Oklahoma. So all these big schools, if you play well in these HBCUs, these guys are transferring out. They're coming to get you. So that's why, and it's not just HBCUs. It's anything FCS level or below. More and more guys are transferring out to get a bigger opportunity, get seen. So this is where, if you're undrafted, you got to show that you're worthy of being drafted, because when the push comes to shove, the paychecks are going to end up being the same.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. To your point, Brian Cook played at your alma mater, went to Cincinnati. Now he's the starting safety for the Chiefs. So, no, it's a good point.
And it's going to keep happening, unfortunately.
Yeah. I want to talk about the game, but look, anytime I come, and I know you're not about this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I got to talk about Steve Weiss, right? Like, I got it. But you're a Howard guy.
Yep.
I remember when I was in the Washington area, your byline in the Washington Post, I believe you were covering the Wizards.
I was covering NBA back then.
Which I don't understand. 9 wins, 3 in a row, like beating Minnesota like a couple. I don't understand this whole Wizard situation. Anyway, I won't take you back there. But the point being, as a Howard guy, what led you to go to Howard University?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I grew up between Minneapolis and St. Louis. I was a D1 football recruit. I didn't get one letter from an HBCU because my mother went to Hampton. Both my parents went to Hampton.
Wow.
And they're like, well, how come you wanted to go to Grambling or Hampton or Southern? I was like, they had not recruited me. I'm getting letters from Missouri and Michigan State and, you know, Iowa. If they recruited me, I'd take a look. But no, because they don't have the budgets, right? And so started at the University of Missouri, went there for 2 years, was very disenchanted after a year going to school there. I wasn't very good. Football coach got fired.
You weren't, but you got recruited.
I got recruited, but I got down there, wasn't very good.
Okay.
I mean, but I was one of these guys, like right now I'm about 205. Right? I went down there as an outside linebacker. I was big for high school, but I had to put on weight. So okay. I was getting shoved around. So okay. I wasn't very good.
Okay.
And so I came back. I just really didn't like my experience at the university. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go to a black school. I had a high school mate who was at Howard. I said, I'm going to apply to Howard Hampton. Willie Jeffries, the head coach at Howard, who had recruited me when he was at Wichita State.
Oh, Steve, wow.
Steve. Yeah, I can't offer you any money right now, but you come here. We'll figure something out. All right, bet. So, you know, I go to Howard. End up, I would have to sit out another year because transfer rules were different.
Right.
So I was like, man, I can't sit out 2 years. And so I lost my stinger, as we say in football vernacular. But that whole experience of being on that campus and being with people like Michelle Miller, who's on the CBS Morning News, and Stan Verrett at Sports. We all graduated together. Gus Johnson is a couple years behind me. Jacob Whitfield's a year ahead of me. We were all together. And having that experience in the journalism program, being at that campus and being at that city made me a man.
Man, it's so unbelievable. Excuse me, because I was talking with Anthony Anderson. And in the theater program, there was him. There was Wendy Raquel Robinson.
Wendy was there with me.
Taraji P. Henson. Yeah. I mean, Howard is serious business.
Yeah. I mean, just look, your vice president, former vice president, Thurgood Marshall. You know, it's and Howard is to the point that where it's a brand.
Yeah.
You know, it is as much of a brand as the Green Bay Packers. People know about Howard. When a few HBCUs, people, if you say, oh, I went to Howard, like, okay, isn't that black school? Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is more than that because it's international. Yeah. It's got almost $1 billion, endowment. Howard is definitely big time. Steve White of NFL Network joining us here, Radio Row, Super Bowl 59. We are in New Orleans. Thank you for making Box to Row a part of your day. So let's talk Chiefs.
Yep.
Eagles.
Yep.
The big question is, how can the Chiefs stop the running game of the Eagles?
That is the big.
Yeah.
That is, I mean, that's what we all want to find out because no one's been able to, but no one's had a defense like the Chiefs. Like the Chiefs are the top rush defense in the NFL. And, you know, Steve Spagnuolo will do some things as the game goes along to make it very confusing. The Eagles lose sight of what they are. They run the football.
Right.
So unless Kansas City gets up 14 on them, which I don't see happening, they're going to continue to do it. And they pulled Jordan Mailata. They pulled their guards. Saquon's got 2 or 3 different reads off of him. And if you are not precise defensively, you're going to get gashed. And it's funny, in talking to some Chiefs players, some Commanders players along the way, they're like, you know, the one thing people don't talk about with Saquon is his speed. Once he gets in the open field, you can sit there and say you got to rally and gang tackle. You might not be able to catch him. That's the thing, explosive plays with him.
But you know what's interesting? I've been saying this for a while. I'm sure others have said you probably, as you know, Steve Spagnuolo doesn't get enough credit. Like you talk about the three, and we can talk about Andy Reid, and we can talk about, of course, Mahomes and all of that. Steve Spagnuolo's defenses has been and as much a part of that as any of those guys, right? You know, he knows when to dial up the defenses. Look at the Buffalo game going back a couple of weeks ago. Look at the game previous to that with the Texans. The Texans were right there.
Right there.
And then he hits that gas on the defense, and then the Texans are done. Speak to what he's meant to this team.
Well, think about, you know, where he came from, the Giants, right? When they won the Super Bowl, Tom Brady couldn't beat them, and it was all because they had these great defensive lines. Osi Umenyiorua, Michael Strahan, Justin Tuck. And he would only come with four. Now he's evolved, and this is what I think it's overlooked about Spags. Look at how young this defense is. Other than Chris Jones, tell me a defensive player on that side, you know, who's making money.
That's true.
No one's making money. These are all young guys.
Yeah.
All the secondary is young. Trent McDuffie, you know, you mentioned Cook, Joshua Williams. Linebackers, Nick Bolton, Drew Tranquil. These are guys they play great collectively, and they're so good at every level. Now, George Karlaftis is getting double-digit sacks. You know, Charles Amenihu, a veteran, is just a great force on the edge. They play so well collectively, and it's all because of the development. We don't talk about this in the NFL, how you develop players. They developed a secondary. These guys have been, they're in their third year, and they're playing in their third Super Bowl.
Right.
They came out of the gate with the pressure of trying to win a Super Bowl, and now they've sustained it, and they've gotten better. To develop players in the NFL when you have a short schedule each week where you're basically just game planning for your next opponent, not learning technique and stuff like that, goes to show you how great Spags is and his staff is. And that's the one thing that separates the Chiefs from other teams. They're not losing their coaching staff. Right? Matt Nagy went away for a couple of years, but he came back.
Came back.
I mean, look at this. This is something where Nick Sirianni needs to get credit. He lost both his coordinators. He's getting ready to lose another one. And they're still rolling. So salute to these organizations because top down, they are buttoned up.
Yeah. A couple more thoughts with Steve Weich of NFL Network here on the program. You know, one of the things that's been very much a top of conversation is black coaches in the National Football League. Looks like we're getting better with that. Although, you know, I mean, it's always some work to do. The Rooney Rule, right? Like, I guess it's a double-edged sword in a lot of respects, because a lot of teams will say, well, we're going to interview this guy because he meets the requirement for the Rooney Rule.
Check a box.
Right. But then you've had others that have benefited. Yep. Mike Tomlin probably more so than anybody else. Nobody really knew who Mike Tomlin was before. And it was appropriate that the Steelers hired Mike Tomlin as integral a part of as the Steelers were with the Rooney Rule. So where are we? Where do you feel like we are in terms of black coaches in the National Football League?
Look, first of all, with the Rooney Rule, like you said, double-edged sword, I think there are more pros and cons. And let's say, so Aaron Glenn was the one black coach who got hired this year by the Jets. He'd been interviewing for years, right? But I think this is where the Rooney Rule benefited him. Teams met him years ago, and they're like, we're going to track him. Let's track him. He's got some stuff to him. He's a great leader. Let's track him. Time's right. We got an opening. We go get him. Whereas you saw the Patriots make a sham of it, right? They interviewed Byron Leftwich and Pep Hamilton on the same day to meet the requirement before they hired Mike Vrabel.
Right.
So, you know, that's where I just kind of wish, like, you know what, pay the fine for breaching the Rooney Rule and just make it, you know. But in terms of where we are, I think it is better. I do hate seeing things like Rand Carthon, the GM for the Titans, getting blown out so quickly into his tenure, because it's damaging to these guys career-wise. You know, Gerard Mayo, you know, one year. And, you know, and I've heard this from coaches. I said this on air on NFL Network. There's just the feeling that black coaches don't necessarily get the patience and grace to grow. The Giants are sure as hell were patient with Joe Judge and some of these guys.
Yeah. Right?
But Gerard Mayo.
Right.
He's out.
Right.
Like, you don't know all the dynamics that happened there. But I think we are in a better place. But it's still not a good place in terms of people being hired by merit. And on merit. And also, I want to put some blame on some of the coaches, not just on the NFL. If you're a white coach, your entire offensive staff is white. You got the black wide receiver coach, right? There's always a black wide receiver coach and black running back coach.
Right.
What are you doing to make them better?
Mm. Mm.
You know, coaches a lot of times, it's like Andy Reid pushes his guys.
He does.
Like a lot of teams push their guys. Sean McVay, Rams, pushes his guys. But what, like, you got on a DC native shirt. Dan Quinn is about that life. Right, Joe Witt, his DC, he's pushing Joe. This guy's a stud. Let's get him out there. So a lot of it is on the coaches and how intentional they are in training coaches and prepping them for their opportunities.
Wow. I'm going to tell you one of the more egregious coaches. His name is escaping me. Got fired after 1 year from the Cardinals.
Ended up Wilkes.
Oh, my God. Because he had the HBCU ties. His first job was at Johnson C. Smith. He had some ties with Santa State. Is he ever going to get a head coaching job?
I doubt it. It's unfortunate. You know, he's part of Brian Flores' lawsuit, suing for discrimination. Steve Wilks is a wonderful coach and an incredible human being and a great leader. But, you know, think about it, too. He was with the 49ers for 1 year as a defensive coordinator. They go to the Super Bowl, lose to the Chiefs, and they blow him out. So when you have a situation where you get fired after 1 year as a head coach, fired after 1 year as a CEO with a championship team like the 49ers, people are going to say, maybe there's something there that rubs people the wrong way or whatever. They're not going to say that, though.
Yeah.
Look, Mike Vrabel will rub people the wrong way, but he's a hell of a coach.
Right.
He gets that he's a hell of a coach tag on there. A lot of black coaches don't get that he's a hell of a coach on there. He just rubs people the wrong way.
Yeah. The one and only Steve Weiss joining us here on Radio Row on Box to Row, Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans, getting ready for the big game. He's always dropping knowledge on us here on the program. Steve, appreciate the time, man. We're so grateful for you, what you're doing. From a national perspective, as it relates not only to the NFL, but to HBCUs as well, man. Continued success in all you do.
Appreciate you, brother. Appreciate you big time.
Absolutely. On the way, it's more of From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware. Right here.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Kevin Broaddus, the head men's basketball coach at Morgan State. Like, when y'all, did y'all go head-to-head when you played against him when you were at Bowie and he was at North Carolina Central?
I got to look back on that. I'm not too sure. I think Central beat us most of the times back then. I'm not 100% sure, but I know I had good games against him. But you got to win. That's at the end of the day. You got to win.
Now, Cleo so could play.
I had to look that up. He could play, but he wasn't his father.
Well, I mean,
his father was outstanding.
Well, not many were seniors.
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station. Listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row. Box to Box to Box to Box to Row.
We're back here on Box to Row, Radio Row here in New Orleans, Super Bowl 59. Excited that you've joined us here on the program. So in our last segment, first you're going to hear from Roy Anderson, the cornerbacks coach for the Philadelphia Eagles. He is a Howard grad. And then next you're going to hear from Kevin Braxton, an offensive assistant with the Kansas City Chiefs. And you'll hear from both of these gentlemen right now.
Talking with Roy Anderson, the cornerbacks coach for the Philadelphia Eagles, first Super Bowl. So what's the experience been like so far?
It's been really good. Pretty much what I expected as far as like a lot of people here, the atmosphere, the vibe. So it's been really good. And today will be our first day of practice. So the first couple days, kind of just scoping out the scheme, doing the media day. But it's been really good so far. Enjoying it.
So I like to talk with coaches. And there's a couple of coaches on the KC side that have HBCU ties, right? You go, if I read your bio correct, you go back to the Billy Joe days at FAM. Yeah, so sort of speak to that. Were you part of that move when FAM tried to make that move to 1A that year?
I was there right before that. So they were kind of going through the process, the first stage of it. And then right when I left to go to Florida State, that's when they really amped it up. And Coach Joe, he gave me my first coaching job as a grad assistant. And luckily enough, I had another GA there. We went to high school together who played for Coach Joe at FAMU.
Speak to you've been around a little while now, right? Like you've been in the NFL circles, maybe 15, 16, 17 years or so?
This would be my 19th overall, but as far as the coaching side, this would be my 16th year in coaching in the NFL. My first three, I was a personnel assistant in the scouting department.
So what is it, you know, can you kind of take us through kind of your coaching history and getting to this point with all of the experiences and now being at your first Super Bowl?
Yeah, I really started out on the offensive side, working with the quarterbacks at FAM, and then went to Florida State, was with the quarterbacks there. Went over to LSU as a GA, was still on offense with the wide receivers. And then my first coaching job was in Baltimore with the Ravens. I moved over from scouting, and actually a defensive position was the first spot that they had available, quality control, working with the defensive line. Did that for a couple of years, and then moved over to the defensive backs and been with the DBs ever since. So it's been good as far as like working with different positions, getting different perspectives on it. And then really the DB room kind of really stuck with me after Baltimore when I moved over to DBs in 09. Been with either the safeties or the corners ever since, and really it's been more of a natural fit for me. So it's been really good.
Speak to Howard, quarterbacks, like the, Ted White. I think, did you play with Ted White and, I mean, you know, Jay Walker, you know, all of these guys that have come through, guys that have come through since. Quentin Williams a little bit more recently, really good. Like, I don't know how much you kept up with him. But anyway, can you kind of speak to being a Howard quarterback and the legacy, really, of Howard quarterbacks?
Oh, it's been awesome. Our head coach at the time, Steve Wilson, he was a former NFL player, played 10-plus years in the league with the Cowboys and the Broncos. And one thing he always said, he's like, hey, you're going to be the quarterback of Howard, you got to lead the team, not only the offense. So that's one thing that we learned back then. And then, just like you said, guys like Jay Walker, who had a phenomenal career, not only in college, but then in the NFL, he played some. And then Ted White, who ended up breaking Jay's record. So that was really good. And I still speak to those guys till this day. And then Greg McGee is funny because he was one of the Howard quarterbacks. And when I was with the Vikings, he actually ended up interning with us and did a really good job. So, yes, yeah, it's a long legacy. And it's a pretty close group. We still keep in touch. But definitely glad I was able to have that experience there.
Speak to your corners kind of going up against, you know, I mean, some, you know, going up against Patrick Mahomes in that Chiefs offense.
It's going to be a challenge for them. They know that. They pass the man. Their receiver group is really good. The tight ends are great. Great play callers. They're explosive. So they know it's going to be a challenge.
One of the things that I'm finding, Roy, is that, I mean, you've been doing this. You're, you know, you got some younger coaches that have HBCU ties or HBCU grads. And it seems to be a lot more of those coaches, especially in the National Football League, maybe not so much at the FBS level, but definitely in the league. Can you kind of speak to how that's grown in terms of coaches, not with HBCU ties, but I would say more specifically, guys that played, that are alums of HBCUs?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with as far as the minority internship opportunities that they can get, not only during the summer, now teams are starting to spread it out throughout the offseason. Because when I started coaching, you only got a chance to do it in the summertime, and college schedules are much more busier now to where they may not have the time to do it in training camp. Now teams are letting guys come in throughout OTAs, throughout mini camp, and as well as training camp. So now more opportunities are out there for guys. So instead of getting two coaches from HBCUs for one team, maybe they can get 8 to 10 throughout the offseason and training camp. And I think that's helping, especially like you say, there's more and more coaches from HBCUs to really help those coaches out who want that opportunity. So I think that's a big part of it. And then with some people in front offices from HBCUs, I know Brad Holmes, he's an A&T grad, who's a GM at Detroit. So anytime you have guys in that position that can help guys out, I think that's helping. I think that's what's helping out now.
Do you have aspirations to be a head coach at the NFL level?
I would love that opportunity. If it comes, I would love to have that opportunity to be able to lead guys. But definitely just enjoying this position that I'm in right now.
And one of the reasons I ask that is because in the history of the National Football League, you've had two head coaches with HBCU ties, Art Shell, Leslie Frazier. That's it. Did you think that you, coming from an HBCU as a player at Howard, having coached at Florida A&M, would in fact have that opportunity to be in the position you're in now? I'm not saying it's right, I'm just asking, because a lot of our coaches don't get that opportunity. Did you think you would have that opportunity?
And it's funny because I always wanted to coach either high school or college. Like, I never even thought about really coaching in the NFL. That was just one of my dreams, to be a head high school coach or a head college coach. And then it's funny you mentioned Art Shell, because he came and spoke to us my senior year in college, and I asked him, him, hey, what advice do you have for me as far as trying to get into coaching at any level? And he was like, hey, you need to put it out there. That's what you want to do.
All right, here with Kevin Saxton in his second season with the Kansas City Chiefs. He was a coach on the Benedict team that won the SIAC championship, went undefeated, matter of fact, won that SIAC championship, undefeated in the regular season and won that SIAC championship going back a couple of years ago. So speak to being here now in this environment, preparing for another Super Bowl in your second season with the Chiefs.
I mean, it's amazing. You know, obviously, you like to live in the moment, right? And you know, and just love being here, love what you do, and so you know, being able to be here 2 years in a row is something special. And you know, hopefully, we can do what we're here to do.
So tell us, what is your job on this coaching staff?
Yeah, so I'm an offensive assistant and assistant to the head coach, and so you know, just kind of assist around offensively. I'm in the quarterback room and help those guys where need be, and you know, help coach on the administrative side, knock things out, keep him on track, make sure we're good to go. You know, on the offensive side.
You know, I think what's interesting, a lot of times when you come from a smaller school like you did when you played, then specifically when you come from an HBCU in the coaching realm, a lot of times you don't get these kind of opportunities. Speak to how you know your coaching path and how you got to this point.
Yeah, so you know, like you said, started off at small schools. You know, I started off coaching at my alma mater at Emory Henry College, and you know, coached running backs, coordinated the offense for a couple years, going from there, and then going to the high school level actually, and you know, and doing that for a season, getting that different aspect of coaching younger guys, you know, rather than those college age guys, and you know, and then jumping back to college and being at Benedict, and you know, which is a different environment, right? You're talking HBCU, different realm, different environment, and you know, having a ton of success there, and so then jumping and being here. So you know, it's that realm of small schools, you know, having a lot of things to do, different aspects, having my hand in a lot of different areas, you know, not just solely focused on ball, you know, so that yeah, that's my journey.
Yeah, how did you get here? What led to being here in Kansas City?
Yeah, so when I was at Benedict, the summer before my first season there, I was in the Bill Walsh Minority Fellowship with the Chiefs here in training camp. So, you know, that kind of started off here for me, being here, being in training camp, being around these guys on staff, being around Coach Reed, the players, and then Dan Williams, who's assistant quarterback coach. Me and him go way back, right? We go way back to 2017, and so having that prior relationship also helped kind of navigate myself through the door.
No, very. So you went right from Benedict to Kansas City?
Yes.
Okay. All right, very cool. But you can be a great coach and not get the opportunity. A lot of times we've seen that because you're in at an HBCU. Was there any trepidation about that?
Not necessarily. You know, for me, my mom graduated from Howard, so, you know, I have some HBCU in my blood. And so my quarterback guy that I grew up training with, he's a Benedict alum, you know, and so in the Hall of Fame there, Ramon Robinson. And so, you know, I've always had that connection. So it's hasn't necessarily been, I don't know about doing this, or, you know, I don't, you know, that aspect. It was more so of, here's an opportunity. You know, I've heard nothing but great things about Chinnis. So let's attack this opportunity. Let's make the most of it.
Yeah, no, very good. So speak to, and you've already spoken to what you do as an offensive assistant or analyst, I guess specifically, for the Chiefs. What can you speak to, maybe how you've seen Patrick Mahomes grow from last year to this year?
Yeah, I mean, he's just continuing to mature year in and year out. He approaches it as if he's a rookie, and I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, you're going into it and you can't get weary doing the little things, and so he's continued to approach each day as a new day, as a day for him to get better. You know, and you can see his feet are getting better, his decision making is continuing to get better. You know, and those are those little things that help you get over the edge.
Andy Reid, talk about what he means to you.
I mean, he's incredible teacher, you know, incredible person to work for, to be around on a day-to-day basis. You know, he's going to do everything he can for you to make sure that, you know, you're successful in whatever it is that you want to do.
Again, you heard from Roy Anderson, of the Philadelphia Eagles, the cornerbacks coach, and you heard from Kevin Saxton, the offensive assistant for the Kansas City Chiefs. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Steve Weich of the NFL Network for joining us today here on Box to Row. For more information on the program, visit our website, boxtorow.com. Also, don't forget, if you're listening to this program early, you can catch our live show 10 a.m. to noon Eastern on Saturday Eastern time. That's 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central time. Again, this Saturday, you can pick that up on the Box to Row YouTube channel or on TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com. And always remember to support those that support you. Box to Row from the Super Bowl is produced by DW Communications.
Time for this show to drop the lid. That'll do it for this week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware. Join us again next week for an in-depth look at historically black college athletics and the biggest news stories of the day.